Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Fort Wainwright officials are evicting the union that represents federal employees from its office on Post. The state leader of the American Federation of Government Employees says the same thing is happening in other federal facilities around Alaska as part of the Trump administration's campaign to neutralize public employee unions. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The head of the AFGE local that represents 1,000 or so federal workers on Fort Wainwright says the union and Post officials have for decades maintained good relations until recently.
It's been within the last year that the relationship has completely soured.
Local 1834 President Bill Ward says that's when Wainwright officials told him that a new federal policy requires the union to pay rent for office space on Post at fair market value. When he refused, he was told the union will have to rent space off Post.
We got the notice that we're evicted from the offices that we've been in since 1972. We got 30 days to get out.
Ward says Post officials also cut the amount of on-duty time he can spend working on union issues by 75%. They also tried, unsuccessfully, to decertify the union. He says Army officials cite executive orders issued last year by President Trump to justify their actions.
The stance that we've been given was that it's an executive order and we have to follow it.
Fort Wainwright officials declined interview requests to talk about the dispute, citing ongoing collective bargaining. But they emailed a statement that says they're evicting the local, quote, in accordance with Executive Order 13837, which prohibits government agencies from providing free or discounted office space to labor organizations, unquote.
They want to destroy the unions. Their goal is to get rid of us, so we are actually no longer a hindrance.
Dave Owens is head of AFGE's statewide office that represents about 10,500 federal employees in Alaska. He says the Trump administration claims the executive order prevents taxpayer dollars from benefiting unions, but Owens says taxpayers pay a lot more for the number of staffers that installations typically assign to labor issues.
So these guys, four or five of them, are 100%. They get all the time they need, and they represent the agency against the employees. The only one the people have got is the union. What you got on Wainwright, you got one guy, Bill Ward.
Ward says more than two dozen AFGE officials use the Wainwright office for training and other official business. And Owens says it's important for the union to have a presence on Post because it's much easier for civilian workers to stop by during lunchtime or before or after work.
It's convenient to the employees.
Owens also says AFGE doesn't have enough money to rent space because membership's been declining due to privatization policies and a 1978 law that made union membership optional for federal workers. So he says Fort Wainwright's local has accepted offers from the Laborers Union and International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers to use their offices in town. And he says that's probably what the local representing workers at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson will do when base officials order it to pay rent or move.
They're going to kick us off the base. That's on J-Bear. That'll happen within the next 2 months.
J-Bear officials said Wednesday they're negotiating with Local 1101, but they haven't issued an eviction notice. Owens says Coast Guard Base Kodiak officials also are pressuring the union local representing workers there and at three other bases around Southeast, although Coast Guard officials deny that. But Owens says such practices are becoming widespread at federal facilities here in Alaska and the lower 48.
This is happening all over the country. Not just here.
Owens says AFGE has successfully fought many of the executive order provisions in court and will continue to do so. But he says the most effective way to stop the campaign against public employee unions will be to defeat President Trump in the next election. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
A judge has reduced former Fairbanks militia leader Schaefer Cox's federal prison sentence. Alaska Public Media reports that Cox was resentenced this week in federal court in Washington State as a result of an appeals court in 2017 throwing out Cox's conviction of solicitation to commit murder. Two other convictions for weapons charges and murder conspiracy remain. After witness testimony all day Monday, a judge on Tuesday reduced Cox's 25-year sentence by 10 years, leaving him with about 8 years to serve. Assistant U.S. Attorney Stephen Scrocky says he is not disappointed by the appeal ruling and sentence reduction.
This is part of the judicial process. We had our say in court. The defense had their say in court.
But Scrocky adds that the solicitation charge was a large part of the original case.
I would note that because of the count was reversed by the Ninth Circuit doesn't mean factually that the agreement and solicitation to commit murder of federal officials or people who would show up didn't happen. Those facts did occur.
Cox, a self-described sovereign citizen, and three fellow militia members were convicted related to the amassing of weapons and a plan called Two for One, in which they would kidnap or kill two government or law enforcement officials for every one militia member who might be arrested or killed. In his successful appeal, Cox's lawyers contended the solicitation conviction was unjust, as it was based on Cox bringing armed bodyguards to a radio station appearance in North Pole. Cox is appealing the murder conspiracy charge. His lawyer did not respond to a request for comment. A national expert on recalls of elected officials says the legal fight over the proposed recall of Governor Mike Dunleavy highlights how unusual Alaska's law is on the issue. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
Joshua Spivak has been following recalls of politicians for more than 20 years. He's based at Wagner College in New York City, and he says there's something different about what's happening in Alaska.
Alaska has perhaps the most unique recall law in the country.
Most states that have recalls allow them for any reason. It's up to voters to decide. Spivak says Alaska is one of eight states that defines in law the grounds for recalls. In these states, people proposing recalls must give a reason that complies with these grounds. But Alaska is unique among these states in that it requires recall organizers to gather many signatures before state officials can certify a recall application. Once that happens, an even larger signature gathering effort must happen to force a recall election. Spivak says that's not the only difference.
That itself is odd. But what makes Alaska doubly strange is that there was a change in the law in some ways by a few Supreme Court decisions.
For example, in a case in 1984, the court held that a recall law should be liberally constructed so that the people are permitted to vote and express their will. Spivak spells out why this matters. Across the country, the vast majority of recalls have happened in states that allow recalls for any reason, what Spivak calls political recall states. And he says Alaska courts have interpreted its recall law to be more like those states than states that require organizers to give a reason that matches state law.
In fact, the state has had a number of recalls over the years on the local level, not on the state level, and those have occurred because the Supreme Court has adopted a much more liberal approach to the recall, one that makes it almost a political recall state.
He means liberal in the sense of not strict. Fast forward to this week, when Division of Elections Director Gail Finumiai rejected the group Recall Dunleavy's application. The group sued. Spivak says that if the case gets to the Supreme Court and it follows the principles the court applied in 1984, it would likely go well for the recall group.
But that's a different Supreme Court.
Spivak notes that Finumiai drew on advice from Attorney General Kevin Clarkson, and Clarkson says the law should be interpreted strictly. Clarkson says the recall application failed to show Dunleavy committed neglect of duty. So Spivak says the court will have to choose between the two approaches, the liberal approach it took in the past or the strict approach Clarkson is urging. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
And I'm Dan Bross.